Thank you for listening to this Podcast One Sportsnet production, available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He started in a small town in Texas. Worked his ass off to become one of the most famous wrestlers of all time.
We're going to take care of business tonight, and that's the bottom line.
And now, he's dominating the world of on-demand audio.
And he's doing it for the working man.
This is a damn good outlet for me to spew the bullshit off my brain.
Yeah!
This is the Steve Austin Show. Unleashed.
All right, everybody, welcome to Steve Austin Show. I'm coming to you from the pride of South Texas, the Broken Skull Ranch down here in Tilden. I'll tell you what, man, my wife is sitting right next to me in sunflower seeds. Would you pick up your microphone? Chris, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Steve. I'm so happy to be here.
God damn, it's hotter than fuck down here. I tell you what, man, I done turned into a weather sister. I've been living in Los Angeles for 12 years. You've been there your whole damn life, so you know what it's all about. When you come down, and like every morning when I wake up and I go out and let the dogs do their business or go check and put the trash cans out, it's 63 degrees. So when you get up and get outside already, it's 90 degrees.
Yeah.
The hottest has been, 105?
Yeah, well, that's what the thermometer says. I don't know what it is, actually.
God damn, you talk about a change of pace. It's 30 and 40 degrees hotter than I'm used to living.
Yeah, and it's very humid, especially today.
And you know what? God damn, because it rained like a motherfucker. It's drying shit down here, and all of a sudden, my shredder breaks down on my tractor. I come down here to mow everything. I want to mow my big-ass front yard. I got that accomplished. I got a bunch of other roadways to mow and shit like that, and a goddamn part on my mower deck bus, and I call my tractor guy down there in Poteet, Texas, Eldon, and he orders the part for me, so I can't mow. And then it rained cats and dogs out here yesterday. What, it rained about 2 or 3 inches?
At least.
God damn.
It looked like a waterfall.
Man, so then, you know, I got trapped. If my tractor's broke down, you know, I came down here to do the manly work, the macho work, drive a tractor, put the front end load on it, maybe cover up some holes where some hogs made a waller. You'd go out there with my rifle, shoot a coyote or something. But no. Because it's a goddamn muddy, I could get on my Kawasaki mule and ride around because it's four-wheel drive, but it'll fuck my roads up. So I'm kind of relegated to staying in a house. And that's the way a lot of people are here in South Texas. I mean, because once you get out there on your roads, I mean, I've been four-wheeling out there in Georgia when I was living down there. I'm a four-wheeler. It's all fun and dandy. That was leased property. When you own a property and you got to take care of your roads, it's a little bit different ball game. So that means, since my tractor's busted, my Komodo tractor, as Stacy would call it, I can't go mow, and because it's busted, and also because it's a goddamn wet, I can't mow. So guess what?
You're helping me with housework.
I'm helping my baby girl with housework. Now, if there's one thing I can't stand, is pushing around a goddamn vacuum cleaner, and then I got my shop vac, and I vacuumed out every nook and cranny of the pavilion, and then I got that long feather duster with that extended thing off Teddy's porch, wiped all the cobwebs off all the damn crown moldings in the inside and outside of the house. And then I got the regular vacuum cleaner. And then I got the damn son of a bitch. Then I went out to the front door. And a little baby bird made a nest on one of our outdoor lights on our front porch. And there's two little bitty baby birds in there. And they're real hungry. And the parents keep coming by every couple hours and they feed them. And there's a big pile of bird shit all over my goddamn porch. I don't know how old those little baby birds are, but they are shitting like a crippled goose. And so is the mom and daddy that is feeding them. So I got a mess out there. And so, what? Speaking of shitting like a crippled goose, Hershey the Wonder Dog got diarrhea for a couple of days. So she was sitting like a crippled goose. So she would go out about 3 or 4 times at the doggy door. So Kristen left the light on for her. Well, when you leave the light on out here in South Texas.
After a rain.
After a big rain, all the bugs come out. And guess what? Because you're the only motherfucker with the light on, just like Tom Bodette at the Motel 6, every goddamn bug in McMullen County is on my front porch. And some of them were still alive, and some of them just died. Now, Kristen, here's the question I got for you, because I was out there for 40 minutes with my shot back. Out of all the bugs that died on the front porch, what the fuck you figure killed them?
They got stuck on the front door with the rain.
They got stuck on the front door. They was kind of built like sticks. They're long, skinny bugs. And they fly around because they got wings, and they just died.
Maybe it's the humidity.
Goddamn, maybe they died of a heat stroke trying to get into my house to get in the air conditioner. So I vacuumed up all those fucking bugs, and it was hotter than a motherfucker.
And those parent birds were very upset.
Goddamn, I don't know what kind of swallows or whatever kind of bird they are. It ain't a field lark. It ain't a dove. Built up a damn, what am I going to do? You know, fuck, I can't go out there and, you know, jar the nest up off the light fixture. And
well, they're so cute.
Pasture, huh?
They're so cute.
Well, I know, you know, but like, you know, if I didn't have a heart, I'd just go, well, fuck, get off my goddamn light fixture. And you're shitting all over my porch.
They'll grow up soon enough.
Well, goddamn, I tell you what, I hope them damn parents get them out there and get them to flapping their wings so they can fly away and go fuck someone else's shit up. Speaking of fucking shit up, our air conditioner was fucked up. It was broke. We got over here, and when we're not here, because we try to keep our air conditioning bill, our power bill real low, we set the thermostat on about 85 degrees. Ain't no reason to cool this place off because ain't nobody here. So anyway, we get over here from Victoria after seeing my baby sister get married. We roll in here, and it's about 105. And I'm a damn sissy because I've been living in Los Angeles too long, used to 65-degree weather. And we walked in this goddamn house. We turned the air conditioner on. We had to sleep in the other house that night because this fucking air conditioner wouldn't catch up. And I said, well, I think it's just too hot. It'll keep trying. And it'll ultimately, you know, start up because it usually does this.
Well, we got here in the early afternoon, turned it on. It was still 86 by the time it was 11 o'clock at night. It hadn't cooled one single degree.
Well, it got to 85.
Oh, it did. Okay.
85, 86. That don't make a shit. Homie, don't play that shit. I can't sleep in 85-degree weather. Now, I'm sitting here bitching. You know, like I said, I'm a damn weather sissy.
Well, we could. I just felt bad for the dogs.
Well, so anyway, yeah, so I could take it. I was in my sleeping bag with my long johns on. We go over to the house next door and turn that air conditioner on, and we sleep like crazy. And call air conditioning people come out, and sure enough, they come out. We needed the Freon charge and some other coolant, whatever the fuck you call it. And they ran all kind of diagnostics on it. What's the name of our air conditioning people?
South Central Air Conditioning.
Hey, South Central Air Conditioning in Jordan, Texas. Thank you guys for coming and helping a brother and a sister out. Thanks to you guys, I'm sitting here in my own house, cool as a cucumber. As a matter of fact, Kristen, would you go get me a turtleneck sweater? I'm a little bit cold. God damn, I tell you what, the house, when you ain't got no outside chores to do and you got to work inside, I tell you what, you know, a house can look pretty clean, but when you really get down to it and you got time to kill because you got to do something, this house was kind of dirty, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't that dirty.
It wasn't?
No, I cleaned it the first day we got here.
Yeah, but you wouldn't vacuuming all the bugs on the outside of the porch. And those ones that got inside, shit, I got up this morning. Tell them what time I woke up this morning.
4:30.
4:30 in the morning. My alarm clock didn't go off. I didn't set my alarm clock. For some reason, my eyes just opened up. I was like, what the fuck? It's 4:30. Maybe I'll go back to sleep. I'm on my damn fitness kick, got broken skull challenge starting up in a damn month. It's not like I can make a Bloody Mary and go back to sleep. So I was sitting there. Okay, maybe I can go back to sleep. I couldn't do it. So I got up, drank my 2 cups of coffee, and went outside and started working out at 5:30 in the morning. 5:30 in the morning, I'm out there working out, Kristen. Now, what's wrong with this picture? I'll tell you what's wrong with it. Homie don't work at 5:30 in the morning. Well, I want to still be in bed.
Yeah, but you have to out here because it's too hot.
You ain't shitting. And here's the thing. God damn it. I had my lights on. I had my neon lights there in my gym. And I was going to open the garage to roll up doors. But because I had the lights on, all those fucking bugs that weren't dead at the front door wanted to come into the pavilion, so I had to shut those doors. I was in there sweating like a son of a bitch trying to get my swell on, trying to make a comeback from his rotator cuff surgery. I'm going to get part two of my workout in this evening, and that's going to be hotter than fuck. I'm in 2 days, Kristen. I'm making a comeback.
You are. You've done really well.
I'll tell you what, man, it ain't nothing like this weather. I'll tell you what. I'll be happy when the Broken Skull Challenge starts because we'll be filming right there in August. It'll be hotter than fuck. We'll be on a mountain in a desert. And I'll be the coolest son of a bitch out here because when you come out here to the Broken Skull Challenge to do, you get in shape, you get tough routine.
Yeah.
Ain't nothing they can throw at me that I can't handle. Macho like a motherfucker.
You going to run the Skull Buster this year?
I whip my Skull Buster's ass. It ain't nothing but a thing like a chicken wing on a shoestring. I had one more story I was going to tell.
The fly on your face.
Oh, man. We was at the damn wedding the other day watching my baby sister get married, and I took a picture with my brother, Kevin, my baby brother. He's 10 months younger than me. He was drinking a beer, and I was drinking a Broken Skull Ranch margarita, and this was a quadruple shot. Normally I make a triple shot, but I was quadruple shot because they weren't serving no alcohol at that wedding. And so after the wedding, me and Kristen ran home, let the dogs go to the bathroom, checked on Hershey. I made myself a margarita. My baby girl drove back to the church to go to the reception, and we took a picture out in the parking lot, and I posted it on my Twitter account.
You got lost to the church.
Well, that's a whole other story for a whole other day. I'm trying to give my wife directions. I'm supposed to be going to the Baptist church, and they said...
I'm like, you grew up in this town, and you're asking me for directions?
Goddamn, I mean, I've been gone for 40 years, and I didn't know that the Baptist church is right next to the Methodist church, which is next to the
Lutheran church.
Pentecostal church, which is next to the Lutheran church. I mean, son of a bitch, there's so many churches there. I didn't know where to shit or wind my watch. Heaven forbid someone give me a street address on a building. You know, that's all they had to do. And so because the wedding and the reception was at two different places. Anyway, back to the story. I'm taking a picture to...
It's picture, not pitcher.
So I'm taking a picture to always remember this time with my brother. And we took the picture, and then I started looking at the picture. And I then noticed that there was a fly on the left side of my face.
You got photobombed by a fly.
I got photobombed by a goddamn house fly. And here's the thing about it. I put it on my Twitter account, and I saw the fly there, but I said, what the fuck? It was the best picture I took. I could have used two or three of the other pictures we took, but none of them looked as good as that picture, the one with the fly on my face. So, you know when you took the four shitty pictures, and the best one is the fly on your face, and you post that one? You didn't take very many good pictures, and I knew I was going to cut a promo on the fly for fucking up my goddamn picture.
It's probably the same fly from Mexico.
You know what? It can't be because I don't think they live that long, but it damn sure had to be related to them.
Yeah.
So I'm going to tell you something. Here's the thing. I've been having problems with flies ever since I did that podcast down in Mexico about 2-3 years ago.
They're haunting you.
They are haunting me, and they're just a thorn in my side. And I'm just trying to live the life of a normal man, to go hunting, go fishing, raise a couple pups, be married to his wife, and work, pay my bills, live the American dream. I'm taking a picture with my brother Kevin, and a fly lands right in the goddamn left side of my face. And here's the thing, Kristen. If the fly would have just landed on my face and a picture of me, no big deal. He just landed on me. But when he landed on my face and my baby brother's in the picture, well, when the people look at my Twitter account and then they see my baby brother in that same picture, well, then they're going to laugh at him because his older brother that he looks up to and respects has a goddamn fly on his face. So fly, if you're going to land on my face, that's one thing. But when you land on my face and my baby brother's in the picture, you brought family into the equation. And when you did that, you done made it personal. So it's like the legendary Buford T. Justice told Junior, put the evidence in the car. I ain't got to put no evidence in the car. The evidence is on that picture on my Twitter account of that fly landing on my face. So now, when my brother goes to work, he gonna walk in the coffee room, clock in, and everybody gonna start laughing at him. And say, hey, your brother's so goddamn stupid, he got a fly on his face. What the fuck's wrong with you Williams people? So when you cause that kind of problem, it means that you've only expedited the fact that I'm going to get my revenge on your motherfucking ass. I walked in the other day. I was about to grab my shotgun out of the safe. My wife said, Steve, you want me to make a tuna casserole and some mashed potatoes? And I said, no, baby. I said, give me a Diablo sandwich and a Dr. Pepper. I'm in a goddamn hurry.
People probably don't even know where that quote's from, Steve.
That's from Smoking a Bandit.
Yeah.
So I don't know why. And here's the thing, Rambo. They drew first blood. Not me. They drew first blood. Mr. Fly, this is the last time I'm telling you. Anytime, anywhere in the world, you want to settle a score one-on-one with Stone Cold Steve Austin, all you got to... No. Let me take that back. There's a promoter in Stamford, Connecticut, named Vince McMahon. He got a show going on in Orlando in about 9 or 10 months. It's called WrestleMania 33. If you want a piece of me, if you want to insult my family, if you want to embarrass my baby brother, I got to have my revenge. So if you got any guts, you'll fly your ass down to Orlando, no pun intended, and you will do battle with Steve Austin in a Texas death match, and we will settle this score. And you will never, ever embarrass my family again, because my brother got to clock in at work every day, and then someone's going to take a picture and put it in a copy machine and hang it by the clock and laugh at my baby brother, and you're going to cause him hard times. And so if you're going to put my brother through the hard time blues, then that means I got an ass whooping with your name on it, and that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so. You sorry, low-life piece of shit motherfucker. Kristen, are you ready to wrap up the open of the show so I can get my reeds in and then I can get back to pushing my vacuum cleaner around and getting the Windex and cleaning the windows and the mirrors now?
I wish I could have filmed that.
Well, you know, when I go into the promo mode, I'm sitting there, I got jugular veins popping out.
Yeah, I'm starting to get worried about it.
I thought my damn top of my head was going to blow off. Kristen, that fly embarrassed the fuck out of me. Landed on my face, I couldn't feel him. Shit, I had a goddamn quadruple shot margarita. His whole family could have landed on my face. And here's the thing. It wasn't that the fly just landed on my face. That fly was probably out in the goddamn pasture walking across the cow paddy. People say, what's a cow patty? Is that like a hamburger patty? No, that's a pile of cow shit. Hell, it could have been a piece of dog shit laying out there in the front yard, Kristen, hitting all the germs on my face. By proxy, he rubbed a cow turd on my face.
That's what
by
flies do. On me. That's what they do.
Yeah, that's what they do. And flies are smart. So if flies are damn smart, you want to embarrass my damn baby brother? Meet me in Orlando. It won't be about April, May, give or take next year. I will be in shape for your ass. We're going to drug test you. But you show up, and I will beat the flying fuck out of you. Hey, before we get on to Bill Burr, I got to give a couple of big ups to my longtime sponsors of the Steve Austin Show, Diamond Dallas Page and DDP Yoga. Now, Dallas and his crew are the ones who put together the Resurrection of Jake the Snake documentary. And this is one badass documentary, but you ain't got to take my word for it. Just look how well it's doing on Netflix. Hell, right now, the Resurrection of Jake the Snake is the sixth highest rated documentary of all time on Netflix. People are loving this documentary, and not just wrestling fans. So check it out on Netflix, and be sure to give it a rating after you watch it. You can also get the documentary on Blu-ray and DVD now. And the collector's edition comes with 20 bonus features, including a commentary track narrated by Dallas, Jake, and director Steve Yu. So just go to ddpyoga.com/Austin to get the Resurrection of Jake the Snake collector's edition DVD or Blu-ray, along with your own copy of the DDP Yoga program. And if you do it now, You'll save 20% off your order. Listen, guys, DDP is giving you a once-in-a-lifetime deal right now. You heard me right. You will get 20% off anything you buy at ddpyoga.com/Austin. Don't miss your chance to try DDP's life-changing DDP yoga program. This is more than just a workout. This is a way to live a healthier life. DDP gives you everything you need, and all you got to do is commit. So get the Resurrection of Jake the Snake documentary. Get yourself on a DDP yoga program and do all that for 20% off by going to ddpyoga.com/Austin. That's ddpyoga.com/Austin and get 20% off anything you buy for a limited time. All right, people, I got a big favor to ask you that's going to take up about 10 minutes of your time. Can you please go to podcastingsurvey.com and complete a short online survey? And the first 500 people who complete the survey will get a $25 gift certificate to restaurant.com with a chance to win an additional $250 for filling out the entire survey. So do the Steve Austin Show and Podcast One a big-ass favor and take the survey at podcastingsurvey.com. That's podcastingsurvey.com.
Steve Austin. Unleashed.
You talked about earlier about putting worth on yourself. Because when you first start out, you made $5 for gas money. I was making $15 to $20 and making 400-mile round trips when I was living in Tennessee when I went down there to the USWA. So I'm not asking for dollar signs. I don't want to know anything now. How did you start? You know, you come out to L.A., you don't make it. You go back to New York, you write your ass off, you get some gigs, things are starting to spin up. I always tell all the guys to get in the business of pro wrestling. You've got to learn the business part of the business, not just the stuff in the ring.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's the ring. That's the entertainment part of it. And comes the business aspect of it. So as a comedian, and dude, and all of a sudden you get into some demand, you hit a lull, you get come on, and because you get a break from Opie and Anthony and Jim Norton, the HBO thing, how do you determine, hey, this is what it's going to cost you?
You get a good agent. You can't negotiate your own thing. You got to get a good agent. And what I did is I got with a guy who was, he was like me. We started working together in like 2001, Mike Berkowitz, and he was trying to make a name for himself and I was trying to make a name. And we were right at the exact same like place. And as I've gone up, you know, the stand-up ladder, he's gone up the agent ladder. Now he's like, you know, I think in, as far as like being an, he's past me as far as being an agent. I mean, like the client list that he has is incredible. And we always laugh. He used to book me anywhere he could book me. The Skyline Cafe in Appleton, Wisconsin. It's a great gig, by the way. You know, I was working, occasionally working a funny bone back then because, you know, I think those guys always thought I was funny, but I couldn't sell tickets. And it's just like, you know, and, you know, there was those periods where you start thinking, do I need a catchphrase?
Yeah.
Do I, you know... Do I go on tour with like five other redheads and do the redhead tour? Yeah. I mean, what do I need? A hook. I got to get something. And, you know, it all works out. If you just do what you're supposed to do and you do the work, it's definitely a longer road than it is if you have a hook. But, you know, it's a lot of times those people that have the hook, once people are over it and there's nothing else beyond it, you know, you go back down, which is why I love watching you guys because you and Say the Rock had these hooks. But you guys kept writing, and you just kept coming up with more and more shit, and you'd switch it up and everything, and then you become, like, prolific. Then, to me, it's like the Chappelle thing. I could see Chappelle this month, and I could go see him in October, and I would see, you know, the show would change so much. Like, it's like you're just going to see Chappelle. It's like almost like beyond stand-up at this point.
Right. It was funny. When I came to New York, and like I said, I've been in the business 7.5 years. I was full of piss and vinegar. I was laying my shit in. I didn't have a gimmick. And again, this before Stone Cold, and the agents back in, Black Jack Lanza, George Animal Steel, Sergeant Slaughter.
George Animal Steel was the best.
Yeah,
he scared the shit out of me. When I was a kid, I was so afraid of him. He had that green tongue, and he'd eat the turnbuckle.
The hairy back.
Oh, the hairy back was unreal.
Yeah. But those guys, they would tell me they'd watch me work in a ring. When I came in, they'd brought in, you know, a bunch of other guys who they saw as superstars, and they were pushing these guys. And those agents noticed me, and they said, Steve, keep doing what you're doing because you're not a gimmick. It's going to take you longer to get over.
Jesus
but when
Christ.
You get over, you're going to stay over.
Dave Chappelle said the exact same thing to me at the Comedy at the Comedy Cellar. He said, listen, he goes, it's going to take you longer, but when you hit, you're going to hit hard. Just keep doing what you're doing. And I didn't even know what he meant, but I just was like, wow, this genius just, you know, said that I had a shot. But like, yeah, because, yeah, if you're not the hot chick in my business, if you're not the hot chick, you're not the fat guy. If, you know, for a while it was the hipster with the big bushy beard and the hoodie, you know, and you were 34 and acted like you had, you know, the social graces of like a 15-year-old. Like, they were into that for a while. And, you know, being a balding redhead was never in. So I had to go the long way around. But it was better because I don't think I couldn't handle, like, you know, I've seen some guys like truly funny guys that just from like day one are like ready.
Right.
Like Dane was ready. Kevin Hart was ready. I mean, like, just watching those, the way that they were able to, like me, I had to go like baby steps. And then I'd be like, oh my God, Chris Rock just walked in the club. And I was like, oh shit, I almost hope he doesn't watch me.
Right.
I don't want him to see me do stand up. And then, oh my God, I have to go on after him or you know, or whoever was coming at the club at the time. Damon Wayans would pop in a lot back then. And, but he was a guy that, like, you know, Kevin Hart was just like, he wanted to go on in front of me. He'd walk right up and say hello. I'm just really confident guy. Like, he really has, like, that out of all of the guys that I met, Kevin Hart has the most amazing, like his energy is just, he's funny as hell. You want to be around him. And he's just like, it's just always positive, always positive, always positive. Like, and he was one of those guys, like, you could have been the worst manager in the world. And you're like, this guy's going to be, he's going to be huge. Even then, I didn't know he was going to sell out. He sold out the football stadium where the Eagles play. That's insane.
How did you go about developing your style? Because in wrestling business, I keep making these parallels because there's some more I want to make if I'm not boring the fuck out of you. But when you start out, when you're green in the wrestling business, the worst thing you can do and what everybody is guilty of is rushing, going too fast, you know, beam, 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 beam.
Oh, God,
slow the fuck down.
It's, you know, because you same, might have all seven, the same shit.
7-minute set, and all of a sudden, like you said, on your first gig, you finish in 3 minutes.
Absolutely.
Like, goddamn, you fucking jerked off too fast.
I used to do 10-minute sweats, and I just said 10-minute sets, and I would come off stage sweating. Like I was James Brown or something. I was just nervous, and I certainly wasn't doing anything James does. I was just up there talking, and I was just so nervous. I just didn't want to bomb. I didn't want to go through. It was really when I moved to New York, and like when I lived in Boston. Boston's really, you know, at least back then it was really segregated and everything. So, you know, I started my career. The first 3.5 years of my career was performing in front of drunk people from Massachusetts, white drunks from Massachusetts, which is what I was. I was a white drunk from Massachusetts, so it was easy. I mean, it wasn't easy because I didn't know what I was doing, but I didn't have to be like, oh, are they going to understand my perspective? And then when you move to New York, which is why I really think that you have to put your time in New York, is you go up in front of everybody. And all of a sudden, it's black, white, Puerto Rican, Jewish, like super fucking born into money, you know, just got out of jail. You know, you have like... Like, it was just everybody, and I just remember going on stage and being nervous, so I came on my heels, and I instantly would start bombing, and what I learned to do was you had to be not aggressive as in going at them, but you had to be confident, and right. It took me a long time to get that down, but I just kept going and going. Like, I was so afraid of, like black crowds initially that I just started doing the black rooms. I just started. Plus I also knew I had material that I thought could, you know, I wanted to make sure I was saying it right. You know, as white as I am, if you're going to talk about it, you had to make sure you were saying it the right way. Because, and what I do now I know when I'm saying it in the wrong way in front of a white crowd is you get like, you like, whenever I get that energy, like, yeah, woo. When I hear that shit, I go, oh, I'm not saying it like that. I'm not saying right. it like that. I'm trying to keep this, you know, I'm joking around. I'm being silly here. So there is that thing. And I wish shows in general, I wish TV shows were more, I don't know how you would do it, but just appeal to more people so that you could do an audience like that. So, because the longest time I did the Apollo, I would do BET and then I would do Comedy Central. And I always wanted to draw a mixed crowd. But, you know, as you move up in this business, I mean, the whiter it becomes in this weird way. You're not even like conscious of it, and it's just it's a very hard thing to try to navigate, like to try to pull the crowd that you're trying to pull. I mean, I love everybody that shows up to my crowds, but I still love New York, because what I loved was everybody was there, and when everybody's in the room, then you can really joke around. Because there's that social thing where it's like, obviously he's fucking around. The person he's making fun of, that group is sitting right there. You can interact with them. But like, if it's all white people, it starts to feel like a meeting. You know what I mean? And people can, you know, people are.
For us, like when you work the garden in New York, I'm just like, if you could get over in the garden, you can get over in front of anybody. Yeah. Or in any crowd, just because the diverse mixture.
How sick is it looking up and seeing that? The roof, to me, is the iconic thing. Because to me, that was Led Zeppelin, Song Remains the Same. And you just look up and you're like, how the fuck am I standing here right now?
I never really thought about it like that.
Yeah.
I got knocked out in the garden one time and I was looking up at the ceiling. And I didn't know where I was. And the referee, Earl Hebner, I was working with The Undertaker. My fans have heard me tell these stories too many times. He was going to give me a backdrop, and I kicked him in the chest, and he straightened up. And when he did, the back of his head hit me right in the chin, uppercut. I'd never been knocked out in my life up until that point. And I'm laying in the middle of the ring in Madison Square Garden, looking up at the damn ceiling. And Earl Hebner, same referee, looks down at me. He goes, goddamn, boy, you all right? I looked up at him. I said, where am I? He goes, goddamn it, boy, you in the garden. So I finished the match. I didn't know what the fuck happened, but I finished the match. When I go back and look at some old Larry the Cable Guy stuff, he came out when he first started as a comedian with a straight, regular accent. When he created the Cable Guy with the country accent, that's when he got over. Were you always the same with your approach to how you deliver your material? Because you get that, you got this great voice, so you can just ramp up and get that high pitch when you're when you go off on a rant and you start just going off on something. It's almost like you're just freewheeling out there. Was that always your style?
No, I was, when I first started working, I was clean. I wrote everything out. I memorized it, and everybody was just like, dude, you're going to be on TV. Like I looked like, you know, like I should have been like one of those little kids in the back of a station wagon and like a Chevrolet commercial, you know, baseball, hot dogs, apple pie and Chevrolet. I looked like the all American kid. I mean, I was like 23 years old and I had a baby face and I was working totally clean. And I did that because I wanted to make sure I knew how to write a joke. And then it became, you know, about a couple of years of working totally clean. It was then like, this isn't who I am. I don't talk like this. I'm an angry man. I didn't realize how angry I was until it was my 30s. I started to realize when after like the sixth girlfriend broke up with me, who was telling me all my faults. And I'm like, well, this seems to be reoccurring shit here. I guess I need to work on myself. But it's just gradually. I mean, I'm not the same person I was when I was 23 either. So like I was a people pleaser when I was 23. And then there's somewhere along, you know, your 30s, right, you realize like, yeah, this is Yeah, when you're a people pleaser, you attract assholes because only nice guys put up with their shit. Then all of a sudden, you know, you got a bunch of assholes in your life. So it was a combination of on and off stage, me just becoming just more myself and not giving a shit in a good way, not a rude, arrogant way. Just like, hey, this is who I am. This is what I like. This is what I do. If you like it, cool. If you don't, I understand. I'm not going to bore you with it. And when you get to that thing, then just when you're really being yourself, then people who relate to you gravitate towards you, and hopefully it's enough to fill up a room where you're gonna have to go back to your day job. So
one last thing on that line, I got some other stuff I want to ask you about, but okay, man, I always figured kind of that's what I did. I just kind of turned me up to a high level.
Yeah,
first all time, but I mean, it's basically
we'd get obnoxious.
Yeah,
if you walk around your house body slamming people, they wouldn't want to hang out with you.
I would cuss a lot. I started cussing on TV, but I'd use your basic big four cuss words that wouldn't get you tossed off. Yeah, I'm not dropping F-bombs and stuff like that. I started doing middle fingers.
I love that.
You
drank the beer, shaking the finger. That was the greatest thing ever.
But I mean, it was just me turned up.
But I think people loved that because everyone wanted to do that to their boss. Everyone wanted to come in with the beer, suck down three quarters of it, throw the rest in his face, and give the guy the finger and tell him to go F himself.
But my point is, I was willing to go out on a limb and push envelope, and had I not, I never would have made it. But sometimes, like when I watch your stuff, your stuff is so cutting edge with the political correct world that we live in. you really push the envelope, and you're able to get away with it just because sometimes it's like what you said. Hey, not that way, or you know, you'll say something, it'll get uncomfortable in a room.
But you know what it is, though?
What
is
it?
That whole political correctness thing is, it's just lazy journalism. It's just an easy, they'll talk about, I've been doing a bit in my act how they talked about, you know, transgendered bathrooms.
Yeah.
They're not going to talk about, like, you know, the ocean's dying. There's too many people on the planet. Our food is genetically altered. They're not going to talk about, like, that stuff would send everybody into, like, a depression. You know, that's we're doomed type of shit. So right. You keep it light. Oh, look at this. Donald Trump doesn't care that Caitlyn Jenner pees in his building. And then, like, comedians getting in trouble. Like, you can literally genetically alter the food, and no, they're not going to talk about it. But if you do a wage gap joke in a strip mall, you could literally get on, like, you know, national news if it goes back and forth. And it's and most people, they're just tuning in to watch because it's fun to watch somebody get in trouble. But, you know, I still believe people, they're adults. They go to a show, they know you're joking around, you know, and if you make fun of Caitlyn Jenner or you make fun of this or you make fun of that, like, you don't hate these people, you don't believe this stuff. It's a joke.
Right.
But it's one of those deals where you'll be in front of whatever, 1,000 people, 999 had a great time, right? Night after night after night, right? And then one person doesn't like it, they go on a blog and all of a sudden they act like the sky's falling and it's just a... you know, it's a complete non-story. There is political correctness, but it isn't something that, like, in comedy clubs, like, every night, like, there's like all of a sudden everybody got all uptight. Like, you go to a comedy club, people want you to go off.
Right.
They want you to say crazy shit, and they know that you're joking, and that's why everybody's laughing. If they actually thought you were serious, they wouldn't be laughing. Like, people get it. They get that. You know, I mean, do you got to put on a fucking clown nose? I mean, they know what they're doing. But there's always going to be, like, that selfish audience member who lets 800 subjects go by and laughs at all of them. And then when it comes around to them, then all of a sudden, you know, you're not telling jokes. You're making statements and they're offended. And, oh, my God, they're owed an apology. Like, they're a little country.
Yeah.
You know, and you offended them and now there's no more trade. And so it's like, well, then fucking go home.
Yeah.
Stupid. Oh,
that's great. Bill Burr is here at 316 Gimmick Street, and he's a helicopter pilot. And I'll tell you this, it's on my bucket list, and that's why I took Alpha Brain before sitting down with Bill. I talk about flying helicopters and how Bill learned and what it's like in that cockpit. So my brain is ready. I'm firing on all cylinders. Talk about piloting helicopters, and that's thanks to Alpha Brain and Onnit, the folks who make Alpha Brain. Anyway, you guys already know I don't do a podcast without Alpha Brain because I need to be razor sharp and laser focused behind a microphone, and that's what Alpha Brain helps me do. And if you go to onnit.com/Steve to get some Alpha Brain for yourself, you can save 10% off your order. You can save 10% off anything you order at onnit.com/Steve. So yes, you can get 10% off your Shroom Tech Sport. Shroom Tech Sport will give your workout a boost. It helps you go longer and recover faster. And yes, you can get 10% off T+. T+ increases strength and power. It'll improve your athletic performance, and it's safe to use if you're competing. So go take advantage of this 10% discount off your order. Just go to onnit.com/Steve. And another great thing about Onnit and all their products is, if they don't work the way they're supposed to, you can get all your money back, no questions asked. Money back guarantee. So go to onnit.com/Steve to get your 10% discount off all the supplements. That's onnit.com/Steve to get 10% off your order. So Bill Burr's sitting here with me at 316 Gimmick Street, and we're going to continue the conversation after I say thanks to all the great sponsors of the Steve Austin Show, and I say thanks to you for supporting the sponsors, and that includes True Car and the True Car app. If you're looking to buy a new car or a used car, then you need to check out TrueCar.com and the True Car app. I bet you didn't know that you can use True Car to help you buy a used car, too. It ain't just for new car purchases. There are over 500,000 pre-owned vehicles available from True Car Certified Dealers nationwide. And there's over 11,000 True Car Certified Dealers. And TrueCar lets you get upfront pricing information on new and used vehicles and lets you see what other people paid for the car you want so you feel confident you're getting a fair price. With TrueCar, via their TrueCar pricing curve, you see what other people paid for the car and you lock in your guaranteed savings. Then you can connect with a local certified dealer of your choosing. Take them your TrueCar guaranteed savings certificate and make your car buying experience quick and easy. Over 2 million cars have been sold to TrueCar users by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network, and TrueCar users save an average of over $3,000 off MSRP. So when you're ready to buy a new or a used car, visit TrueCar.com or download the TrueCar app to enjoy a better car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.
When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Scented Oils, you'll want to invite everyone over, from book club to the fantasy league, even the in-laws.
It smells amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Scented Oils are infused with 2 times more natural essential oils versus regular Airwick scented oils for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience. Transform your space with scents like white sage and mahogany or lavender and water lily. Now that's a breath of fresh Airwick.
Let me shift gears on you, if you don't mind. You're a licensed helicopter pilot.
Yes, I am.
Dude, here's the thing.
I haven't flown in a minute. I've been in that writer's room working on the next season, After's for Family. Too. Yeah.
I've been wanting to learn how to fly a helicopter for a long time. I was starting off with an airplane, but I was like, man, well, where am I going to go on an airplane and kind of just fly?
Dude, I got
that,
the
right?
School. I know where to go. I know the guys you should fly with.
Here's my question.
They'd love it.
Here's my question.
They'd love to teach
you. I want you to go off on this one, because every time I fly my ranch in South Texas every year just to do a deer count for the survey, so I'm this badass pilot.
That's the most manliest shit I'm going to hear all day, especially out in L.A.
Oh, yeah.
I fly to over my ranch to do a deer count. Have you had to try to have a fucking barbecue out here?
Oh, yeah.
Everybody shows up on their L.A. diets. You end up with like 500 pounds of hamburger. Who's going to eat this shit? Oh, I already ate. You got any Brussels sprouts?
So work with me on this one. So I asked the helicopter pilot, hey, man, you know, he teaches people how to fly as well. I said, man, how hard is it to learn how to fly a helicopter? You think I could learn? I've asked that to about 10 people. Now, most of these people probably only know me for 10 to 15, 20 minutes when they see me on TV. So what the fuck they know? They think, probably I'm still drunk. I'm pissed off. I'm going to hit them in the head with a steel chair, or I've been hitting the head with too many myself. I have brain damage. Well, how the fuck would this guy learn how to fly a helicopter?
Yeah.
So is it hard to fly a helicopter? You're probably a lot more intellectual than I am.
No.
Work with me.
It's what the thing I was intimidated by was the ground school and learning all the like. I had a horrible science background. I mean, I didn't even, you know, up until 5 years ago, I didn't even understand how planes flew. I understood how they got off the ground. Like, I can run across the room and jump in the air, but eventually I come back down. The plane weighs way more than me. How the fuck is that thing staying up there with all the people in the luggage, right? But that was probably the best part about it, is learning all the whole physics of it. And now I completely understand it. And that's what's the great thing. It's not like you go there like how they teach you how to drive a car. Like, they teach you how to drive a car, but you just get in it and they just show you, okay, this goes this way, this makes it go, this makes it stop. They teach you the physics of why what's happening is happening. And then, of course, all the rules and all of that type of stuff. And, like, there's so much stuff you have to know. And that's what was intimidating to me. But, like, you just, you know, if you went full time, you could get it in, like, 2.5 months. Me, it took a year with all the stuff. You know, I'm too busy telling shit jokes to go full time. But, like, at my school, there was a bunch of kids from China because they just freed up the airspace over there. And they just let people go up. And they had, like, 6 mid-air collisions in, like, fucking 3 days. So they was like, all right, maybe we should teach people how to fly first. So these kids were coming over here and Chinese speaking, okay, they could speak a little bit of English, some better than the others, and they learned how to do it. So I used to get inspired by them, thinking, could I go to China and learn how to fly a helicopter? Is this guy speaking Chinese to me, and I have a couple of words that I get, like, and they were able to do it. So that's the hardest part, but actually learning how to do it, it is the biggest thing is, once you learn how to hold a hover, that's the big thing. Once you learn how to hold a hover, but you wouldn't fly in the 22. You're too big a guy. They'd probably put you in the 44, which will cost you more money. But it's a nice one. It's much nicer. But
that's what we fly in, the 44.
Yeah.
What's the gimmick with the feet and the joystick? I mean,
all right. So you got 3 things. You got what looks like your emergency brake.
Yep.
Okay, that's your collective. That's just your power. That makes you go up and down, basically.
Okay.
Okay, the thing in the middle there, the little joystick there, that's how you steer. And then the feet is for, that's just for, if you're in a hover, if you wanted to turn to the left, you could just stay in the hover and just left pedal, you go to the left, right pedal, you go to the right. And then when you're flying, you just use yourself to keep it in trim, which is basically you're looking at your trim strings and you want them to be going straight down so you're getting the optimal amount of lift for the power that you're pulling. You know, you're staying true to the way that you're going. Jesus Christ, I can't explain it well.
But no, it's interesting because you're sitting there explaining this to me. I can see exactly what you're talking about by looking at your eyes and your hands.
So a lot of people think that, like, when you step on the pedals, that speeds up and slows down your tail rotor. It doesn't. It never speeds up or slows down. You're just changing the angle of attack, which is basically more bite or less bite. So if you, depending on which side it's on, this is when it's going to get all technical geek stuff. All the tail rotor is doing is it's compensating for the torque that the main rotor is turning.
That's my big question, because I'm scared I'm going to back off that motherfucker and start spinning a helicopter.
Because everybody saw Rambo and they go, oh my God, if the rear tail rotor goes, you just start spinning, which is what happened. What you do is there's also a throttle on your collective, your emergency brake thing. And what you do is you basically roll it down. And when you roll it down, it's basically like putting a car in neutral. So now the engine's The torque of the engine is not turning the main rotor. What's turning it now is you falling.
Right.
So if you have engine failure, I used to think that you're fucked. Like a plane, you can keep gliding.
Yeah.
What they do is called an auto rotation. If you saw the Rock movie, he goes, "We have to auto rotate," which is the funniest shit ever, because no one would ever say that. If you have to auto rotate, you don't say, "We have to auto rotate." You just go, "Shit, fuck." Yeah. That's what you do. You don't start explaining it to the passengers. But that's just, in my business, that's called pipe. You lay in pipe, you're right. Explaining. Well, actually, no, that's not really. You're just over. That's just a character explaining what the fuck they're doing. So when you're flying, right? When everything's going well, mechanically it's all working, you're drawing air into the main rotor. That's called induced flow. When shit hits the fan and you have to auto-rotate, what's now the air is going, what's keeping the main rotor turning is the air going flowing up through it. So basically it's your forward speed and the weight of the ship falling. And you can, especially in the 44 that you're going to fly, you can glide for a long, long way. And what you do is as you pick out your spot, and what's great about a helicopter is there's all these soccer, baseball fields, all of that shit, is when you come down to your flare, which my instructor showed me is like a hockey stop, you just stop and just like that in the air, right? You get like 10 feet off the ground, you come back on the stick and you flare out like that. This is probably, people don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. The big thing is you don't want to go back up again.
Right.
Because then you're going to slam down like fucking Hulk Hogan. You're going to be 3 inches shorter. What you want to do is stop like that and then level your ship. And then as you fall, right before you fall, you pull the emergency brake. It's your last bit of energy. Dude, you can land like a daisy. Like these guys get it down. Like they had me one time, they had me stop in midair in a hover and then just cut the engine on me. All right, and then wanted me to turn it around and go land someplace else. And they basically show you how to do that. Is what you have to do is you just let yourself fall. You get your RPMs back up to where they want to be. You don't want to overspeed the main rotor. And then you just catch them as they're coming up. This all seems, it took fucking forever. But like I always go down whenever I fly with these guys. I always, like every 6 weeks, I have the guy take me through all this shit. Like, let's do a 180 auto. Let's do a straight in auto. Let's do, you know, I'm way up in the fucking air. Settling with power. We do all of these emergency running landings, all of that shit. So then I feel comfortable to go fly by myself, as I call it, which, and I'll tell you the scariest fucking thing I've ever done was that. That is without a doubt the scariest. The first time.
Where'd you take off and where'd you go to?
I went Long Beach to El Monte. That was the first one. That's kind of a straight shot. You just go up to 605 and you come back, and that's like a 45-minute one. That was freaky enough. But then the next time, is it's called a cross-country flight. It's basically anytime you fly and land, like I forget how, 25 miles away from airport, that you get to log. It's weird. You get to log a cross-country flight. However, if you just fly 20 miles out and don't land and then fly 20 back, it's you don't get to log it as that. And I don't know. I don't pay attention to that because I just do it for fun. But these guys, that you know, it's all about building up your hours to move, you know, to get qualified for the next job. So we had to fly. You had to put 3 hours of time. That's how they log it in time rather than miles. It's basically 3 hours on the Hobbs meter, and that counts time. So I had to, and I had to land at a controlled airport and an uncontrolled airport. So a controlled airport has a tower. Uncontrolled does not have a tower. So your head's on a fucking swivel and you're freaking out. But that 3 hours of being in the air, I mean, like, I just kept looking over at the empty seat going, like, if this shit goes down, you know, I got to somehow get this fucker on the ground. You know, you're going to get it on the ground, but am I going to live? And I just remember when I came back, you know, I fucked up a bunch of things as you're going to. I remember when I was coming back to Long Beach, I'm talking to the tower. I was on the wrong frequency and I'm just, and they're not talking to me. I'm just flying towards the airport. I'm saying, what the fuck do I do? And finally, I'm thinking, I'm going to fly over to Compton and just land and just call them up, like, because they got an airport over there. This is an uncontrolled one. I knew where it was. I'm like, if this fucking guy doesn't talk to me, I don't know what I'm doing wrong, but I ain't running out of gas here. Because that was another thing, too. You had to remember to get refueled. One of the Chinese guys forgot to fucking do it. And the fuel light comes on. I don't know why, with only 5 minutes left. It's like, how about 15?
Yeah.
Give me a fucking chance, right? So the guy finally came. He just said, the helicopter north of the airport, you know, we're on this frequency. And then I put, came on. I'm like, oh, student pilot, sorry. And I remember just the relief of hearing that tower's voice, because you start to know, I was feeling like I was home. Come across the field. You're at 500 feet. You go around the tower and you landed over at Aeroplex. And I just remember when I set it down, you set it down, and then you roll down the you roll down to, like, what is it, like 70 RPMs, whatever the hell it is. And then that's, at that point, you know, you really can't really lift up anymore. So you're beginning the whole shutdown process. And the greatest feeling ever, you pull the mixture and the engine cuts off. And it was just like, I can't even explain the mindset that I was in. Like, I remember I put it back. You know, wheeled the thing back, and I went in there, and one of my instructors used to always break my balls. He just came walking by, and he was just making, hey, how you doing? And he kind of did a double take, looking at my face, and he knew exactly what I was going through. And he just started laughing. And it wasn't until like two lessons later I talked to him. I was like, dude, that is the fucking scaredest I've ever been. And those pilots, as much as they are cool as shit, you know, and just like, you know, they got that pilot energy.
Yeah.
They all laugh. They go, oh, yeah, dude, I was so fucking scared, man. I was never scared. Like, they you know, if you're not, if you know, if you admit that you're scared, they're going to tell you that they were. But I remember before I went to fly, that same instructor, I was so happy I did that. I was just sitting there going over all my charts and all this shit, making sure I had all the frequencies, you know, making sure that I wasn't going to get lost. You get lost up there, you know?
I get it. Yeah.
And he goes, he just sat down next to me. This is going to be a visual joke because this won't play. I remember he just sat down next to me and just kind of went, just rubbed his hands again, gave me a look like, oh boy, let's see how this fucking guy. And the reality is, what you don't realize is there's no way they're going to sign you off to go do this thing if they think there's even a hint of a chance,
right,
that you're going to fuck up. And you should definitely go do it. It's one of the, it's an incredible privilege to be able to do it. I haven't flown in like 2 months, and I got to get my medical up to date. But I've been writing the second season of Epis for Family. So I'm going to fly coming up this week for the first time.
What made you want to learn to fly a helicopter? Of all the things that you could pick out, why?
It was just something. I always thought they were cool. I used to watch Magnum PI and just thought, wouldn't it be fucking cool if you could just, you know, buzz around an island in one of those? And I've also always done shit the hard way. Like, I guess like learning how to fly a plane is easier than a helicopter, but you know, no disrespect to those guys. I'm sure that once you get to the jet level, I mean, I'm just flying these little rinky-dink things, but like, I just thought it was fucking cool. I always just thought a helicopter is cool. You know what's cool about a plane? A jet. A jet is fucking cool. Being able to just like those guys just flying. I talked to this guy, you know, he had his pilot's license, and he was just talking about the first time he learned how to fly this jet. He goes, we went so fucking high up. He goes, I'm literally looking at the curvature of the earth. And he, you know, done fixed wing like prop, and it had these little ass fucking wings. And he said, somehow the design of it, that you, the second you took off, you were already at like a critical fuel level.
Yeah.
And shit. And
yeah,
it's just like, it's just listening to him talking about that. Like, I have a fear of heights, like when I'm not in a plane or a helicopter. Like,
right,
I can't watch those YouTube videos where people climb those structures. And you're like, well, this guy has on a GoPro. He obviously didn't fall and die, so, or else this footage wouldn't exist. But I get like, there's a couple of those where they just keep going up and up and up. Like the guys are going to change the fucking light bulb at the top.
Yeah.
And then these thrill seeker guys, well, they'll just be like doing like pull-ups with no parachute or anything. And dude, like, I've never had nervousness when my hands get sweaty, but that's the only shit that'll make it do that. And to this day, like, anytime, like, I've only flown solo probably, like, I got like 15 hours solo at this point. Like, I'm just so busy. That's why I always go back and do the emergency stuff. But like, every time I fly solo, there's just this amazing feeling of it's the coolest thing ever. It's such a free thing. And then terror of like, you know, and the terror is a good thing. You got to have that. It's like that thing, like, you know, if you walk out to perform, you're like, yeah, you know, fuck these fucking people. You're going to be in trouble. It's the same thing with that. And like, dude, I just fly over stadiums. I fly over the Rose Bowl and shit. I fly over famous movie houses. Like, there's the house from the Horsehead scene, the Godfather house with the ridiculous pools. I fly over that thing and my own house and shit. Like,
I was thinking about taking my helicopter pilot lessons down there in Laredo, because in the middle of nowhere. So if I fuck up, I'm just going to fall in the field. I'm not going to follow nobody's house or the stadium.
Well, that's a good way. See, right there, you'd be a good pilot, because you're always trying to like limit your you're trying to increase your odds.
No, I'm such a fuck up. I'm honest enough. No. So goddamn, all these steel chairs to the fucking head. I'm not the smartest guy in the world. I'm okay.
I would do this if do your training in Texas, but I wouldn't do it this time of year. Because it's going to be hot as shit you're trying to, unless you get into something that has air conditioning.
Hey, the one thing, going up, last thing about the Freda Heights, it's funny because you can put a steel beam right here across this floor, you know, steel beam, I-beam, you know, let's call it 10, 12 inches wide.
Right.
And we walk across that thing all day long.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, you put that sumbitch, just call it 100 foot.
Nah, fuck that.
Then when you go try to walk across it, everything changes.
Yeah, I'd be on all fours crying as I went across.
It's the same fucking width. But all of a sudden you jack it in the air, shit changes, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely it does. But I will tell you, the thrill of doing it versus the fear and all of that, and you always have to have, I feel, a healthy sense of fear, both in doing stand-up and all of that, that I feel, you know, you know what it is? You just fucking do what they tell you to do. You don't go up there and be an asshole. You don't go up there and think you know shit. You bring people up. You don't. I've never brought anybody up. But like, you don't try to like show off or anything.
No.
It's like you literally have their life in your hands. But like, there's two types of people I found. My limited knowledge. There's the fucking people like me that understand you can die, and then there's these other people that they just. Dude, we had a guy. He got his license in the next fucking day. He rented a 22. He flew over the San Gabriel Mountains, which is like fucking 8,000 feet. He went up onto the other side, and he just started giving, landed in the yard of one of his relatives, and he just started giving people rides. Landed in like a neighborhood. Somebody finally called the cops. I was like, what the fuck? And then he kind of threw the school under the bus and was like saying, they said it was okay. It's like, we never fucking said that was okay. But like, and there was this weird thing where I was just saying that guy is out of his mind, but I had a certain level of respect for the balls.
Yeah.
The fucking balls. The first day you get your license, like, that's what you're going to do? If I was going to go on the other side of those fucking things, I would have flown up the 405. You just follow the roads.
Yeah.
And I would, you know, they got where the 5 cuts through. You got that pass. I would go over. And even then, you know, I get nervous going over the 405 when it goes from Hollywood to the Valley. Like, you really start getting up there, and you know, it's just like one of those things where I don't like getting too high, because then you start getting into where the fixed wing guys are,
right.
And those guys kind of have like a 45 degree angle; they can't see below, and that gets a little shady. So I like staying right around, you know, 1,200, 1,500 feet. I just stay in my lane.
Right.
Follow the roads. I always announce where the hell I'm at. Hopefully, I'm on the right frequency. I'm such a dope, but yeah, it's fun. You should definitely do it.
I am. Hey, I got to ask you before. I don't want to take up your whole Saturday. You've been very generous with your time. Hey, man, talk to me about F is for Family. I binge watched the first season. Badass show. It's hilarious.
What do you see this season?
I talked to you the other day. Oh, it's on Netflix. I highly recommend it. I always give people something to listen to on my podcast. I'm going to recommend they watch this. So I binge watched it. How'd you come up with the idea for this thing? Why? And how do you pitch something like this? I hit you with a bunch of questions.
All right. It was an idea that came about through telling family stories on stage. And as I went from being the young babyface comic to being the old guy, a whole new generation of kids with a whole new style of parenting came about. And everything got labeled. bullying, mental abuse, physical abuse, and cruelty to animals, and everything got like labeled. So it wasn't that people weren't laughing. They were just kind of, I was starting to get a lot of, like they were feeling bad. And I was standing, this is funny. This is funny. Yeah. And it kind of got like frustrating. Because then they would come up to me and be like, oh, yeah, my dad was like that, and so-and-so was like that. I was just like, well, you know, I didn't feel that energy from the crowd. I felt like I grew up in, you know, some crazy household. But I knew that these kids could relate to it. And by kids, I mean people in their 20s. So I just kind of got frustrated. So I kind of stopped talking about it. And plus, I was getting older. I didn't still want to be talking about my dad and mom and kids I grew up with. I just felt like I had done all of that. But I still knew that the stories were funny. And I was walking my dog one day. I was like, well, what if I animated him? So initially the idea was I was gonna write little 5-minute vignettes, like the Burr family goes to get the Christmas tree, because it was always like this Norman Rockwell shit, and then be like this total dysfunction. Everybody started screaming at each other. And then in the end, we're eating a great, you know, Christmas goose, and it's like, you know, the cover of the Saturday Evening Post. And, of course, I never did it. And then I ended up meeting Vince Vaughn while I was working with Steve Byrne. And he's got a production company, Wild West. They brought me in. I met Peter Billingsley, Mike Lagnese, Victoria Vaughn, and all of them. And I said, you know, I don't really have an idea. I have this silly idea for a cartoon, and they loved it. And then they introduced me to the great Mike Price from The Simpsons, who's just a monster. Like he's like the nicest guy ever, but like nobody works harder than that guy. He's just amazing. And then that's when it really started to come together. And then we pitched it around Hollywood, and everybody was, you know, just wasn't biting. And I thought it was over. And Vince,
that's what I'm saying.
And then Vince was like, let's go to Netflix. And we went to Netflix, and Vince went in on the pitch meetings. Like, he's all fucking in. So I think they were looking at me thinking I was going to do my Louis show, my Marc Maron show. And my whole thought was, I can't do those shows better than those guys are doing them. They're already doing them, and all I'm going to look is like a third-rate fucking Louis or Marc Maron. So I think they looked at me like a cartoon. I don't get this. But then they were also looking like, that's fucking Vince Vaughn sitting there. And then I think that's why we got 6, which was a weird number. They're like, all right, we'll give you 6. Let's see what you do with that. And then we just brought in all these awesome writers and got all like, I forget who signed on first, but once we got like Sam Rockwell, and then we got Laura Dern, and then Justin Long, and then all of a sudden Gary Cole, and all Dave Koechner, and all these people, Mo Collins from Mad TV, Debbie Derryberry, Haley Reinhardt. It just was crazy. And you know, all these people just signed on to do this stuff. And I always going to forget people's names, you know, not Phil Henry. I'm not going to forget everybody. But anyway, so they all signed on, and you know, I'm doing the Seinfeld thing. I'm surrounding myself with people way more talented than myself. They prop me up and carry me across the finish line. So
how long does it take to complete an episode? But with animation?
Yeah.
With animation and write an episode. How long?
You can write an episode. Somebody writes the initial draft and everybody beats it up. That takes about, to write and record, about 6-7 days.
Yeah.
Work days. And then, you know, so we started writing last couple of days in March. We're up to episode 9 out of 10, so we're going to have them all recorded here in the next couple of weeks. And then what happens is the first thing that comes in is the animatics, which is the rough drawings of it. And then that's when you really just go like, okay, you know, this guy shouldn't be standing here, this kid shouldn't be here. And you know, I'm not good at the directorial stuff, like this should be a wide, why is this over his shoulder, like the other people handle that stuff. But I just more look like, try to keep a reality base to the thing and just make sure the movements or stuff, some stuff we take advantage of the animation, but we're trying to make it like a real thing. Like one of my favorite parts of the first season was when the older brother, Kevin, saves Bill from getting beat up by the bully. And when Bill thanks him, his older brother punches him in the stomach. Yeah. And it's just like, that's like, to me, like that was like what being a kid was when I was growing up. And, you wait till you see this season that we're writing. I just saw the animatic for the first episode, and there's a scene that we were trying to get animated correctly, and we'd seen it like 20 times, and they finally got it right, dude. And the whole room, as jaded as we are, just bursted out laughing, just dying. I can't wait. But it's unfortunately not going to be out again until May of next year. We're trying to hustle here and get it out as soon as we can. But you know, they had to wait to see how it was going to do. So hopefully now, you know, they'll have a little more confidence in us and we can start the third season. So people, you know, once a year we can give you 10 episodes. That's what right. we're hoping. Rather, this time it's going to go a little over a year. So apologies to the fans of the show.
So what was they were obviously impressed with the six. I watched them. I loved about them was, how long was an episode? Is it 30 okay. minutes
yeah.
or just right
yeah.
at?
Yeah, 25.
I mean, with no commercials. I mean, it starts and it's over. It's like, goddamn, I'm ready for the next one.
Yeah.
Because I'm bad about watching TV. If shit ain't good, I just won't watch it.
Right.
I like how each episode rolls into the next one.
That was Netflix's idea, and I was against that. I'm like, really? No, I want to do like The Simpsons standalone. They're like, no, serialize it and blah, blah. And then the second we were going to serialize it, it just took the writing to a whole other level. Now you're not just tracking the story, you're tracking it for the whole season. Like, yeah. okay, we got to bring this kid from here to here, her from here to here. You know, it can get away from you sometimes. You're just sitting there going like, well, that doesn't make any sense because he did this in episode two. And you're just sitting there going, fuck. But, you sit there long enough, you'll get away out
of it. I like the way they're connected to each other because I love it.
I love it.
But I want to ask you about, not to belabor the point, but just in a writing room, we talked briefly to set up the podcast, and man, you sounded like you were under the grind because y'all were trying to crank out these episodes.
Yep.
How grueling is it in the room with the creative people? Are y'all hammering this thing out together after the person has come up with the initial storyline?
You sit at a table, and then Mike Price sits right up front. And we're just pitching on shit. And then he kind of, when he repeats it and laughs, the person typing the script, it goes in. So there's all of this. It's a great room. People are funny. And then what happens is you get like, you know, you get tired. And then, you know, someone else comes up with something good. Or you just start making just ridiculous jokes. Or we just go on. You know, we'll go on and just start watching, you know, Ric Flair videos, or you'll watch like, oh my God, I remember seeing the worst movie ever. Go on YouTube. You just take a mental break and you got to kind of walk away from it. And then you come back and, you know, just keep going and going and going. But fortunately, it's a great room. You know, we work a lot, but we're not there a ridiculous amount of times. A few times, and we start about 10:30 every day. We go to about 6 or 7. Sometimes you go till 9 occasionally. And, but, you know, we go order pizzas and shit, and we just like...
Yeah, how'd you guys decide on the voices? Was that casting? Was that you? I mean...
Yeah, we have great casting people, and, you know, we had ideas. Sometimes you have the idea what the person's going to sound like, and somebody comes in, and they nail it. You're like, bam, that's the guy. Other times, it was like you had an idea, and somebody did something totally different, but you're like, that's really cool. Yeah. Let's get this person, and... you know, the biggest thrill I get with the writing is when the performers come in and like Dave Koechner, we get him he plays Bob Pogo, and like sometimes we just write this crazy shit for him and he can't get through the line. Sam Rockwell, he just recorded like 6 or 7 episodes, and he's one of the funniest dudes ever. And there was like a couple lines that we wrote for his character Vic that he couldn't get through them. And he just, that's just his writers. You know, you're just so psyched, like this guy's been on Broadway. He's been on all these movies and we can make him laugh like that with the shit. Like you get like a real, like charge out of that. And, I know Mo Collins, we got her a couple of times at the table. It's just great. It's like, that's one of the big, like, I love the table reads. Cause that's like, then what you do is once the script's ready, you know, everybody comes down, you know, all the performers, you sit down, you just literally read it at a table and there's a crowd there. Most people connected with the show, got money in the show, and then there's just family and friends that come down and watch. And, you know, when it's going great, there's nothing better.
So when all the actors come in for a table read, and then were y'all all read that together to record it, or everybody in a booth that is at
No, you're just literally sitting at the table with the script.
Really?
And it's just, you're just acting it out. And, there's a whole art to that. And that was another whole thing that I had to learn to slow down. I had to get comfortable. And now, you know, we're doing the 9th one and we did 6 last season. So I got about 15 table reads under my belt. And now I really look forward to them. I used to kind of have a little bit of performance anxiety because I just felt like, you know, I'm not good at reading out loud and I got slight dyslexia shit. So I got to put my finger on the page and just like be going like that so my eyes won't jump around and switch up words. So I was a little performance anxiety with that, but I've been able to get through that. Now I absolutely love them. Like, we got one on Monday. I can't wait, you know?
Now you guys all bonded together. It's like a titan.
Yeah. No, it's great. And there's, you know, no egomaniacs or anything. Everybody just like breaks balls. And it's just, you know, stupid jokes that you do. Like, anytime anybody drops a name.
Yeah.
Like, I'll say, hey, you know, this weekend I did a Stone Cold's podcast. I'll be like, oh, and they like clap. And it just makes you laugh. Look at you, Mr. Showbiz. And it's just like, just that kind of ball breaking. And then sometimes you just pitch stuff that just, you know it's not getting in the script, but you just want to make everybody laugh. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's usually the sickest, most twisted shit ever. And the great thing about a writer's room is that that's the rules. Like, you can't get offended when you're in there.
Right.
That's it.
Yeah.
You just have to go in there and you just, that's it. People are going to trash you. They're going to trash everything that you believe in. Because we're all going crazy sitting in this fucking room trying to get it going.
So what's next for you? I know you're going to you're going to be in the UK. You're going to be in Ireland here in literally a couple of weeks.
Scotland.
How do you schedule your show? Your Evans for Family. You're doing that. You got what, two more episodes?
Yep.
And then you're going to get out on the road. How many days of the year are you trying to stay busy or do something?
I'm getting ready to do another special. So like, you know, so this, you know, I got the, once, you know, we're done with these records, writing and record, then I'm hitting the road pretty hard. And I'm just going to go all out until I tape the special, which I believe we're going to be doing in October. We're still trying to work out where we're going to be. Can't say what city yet or anything, but yeah, it's going to be awesome. And I already have the idea how I want to shoot it.
Have you started writing it yet?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I have like, you know, I got like 90 minutes material, but like I just have to see which ones are going to be worthy of, can make the cut.
Will you consult with anybody on that final, what's going to be a hard 60? Or
I'll probably do a little more, like an hour 10. My last one's like a little bit hour and 15, hour 20. I don't know if I want to do another one as long as that. Like, you know, you want to keep
leave them wanting more.
Leave them wanting more. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, but my question is, I mean, will you like say to your wife, hey, what do you think about this? Or will you just say, no, Bill, you're the funny son of a bitch. You're the guy who knows your material.
No, I run stuff by my wife all the time. And my wife is hilarious. And the hell?
But like,
you know, she always laughs.
Friends. I mean,
oh yeah, no, because I had a couple things. Like, I had this material that, you know, had to do with aborted landings. Like, I just had my fifth one, and you know what goes through your head. But in my head, I was always thinking like, well, it's airplane material. Just the subject alone is kind of considered hacky. But my agents were going like, no, man, but it's some of the funniest, the act out. Like, it's some of the funniest shit you've written. And then I went down to a club, went down to Flappers, and I saw another comic, and he was doing a bit about an aborted landing, and it was different, but it had the same tent poles going through, the stewardess sitting down, you know, not looking at you, freaking out, and blah, 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 blah. And so I just said, well, there you go. There you go. That's why I'm not putting that in a special. So I will continue to do the bit. I'm going to do the bit when I'm on the road, but I just won't stick it into my hour. So like, I have bits of mine, like my getting arrested for drinking and driving, and you know, cop wanted me to pull over and I kept going, right? I have those stories, but I just feel like those kinds of stories people have told. So what I just use those for is when my special comes out and I have no material, I have those that I've never done on a special. So those things kind of hold me up as I'm writing a new thing. And then once I get the new hour together, those old ones just go away. And like, it's almost like, it's just like, it's like leftovers. So I have like leftover bits. So I have enough, I've been doing it long enough that I have like a half hour of leftover shit that I can, you know, I can come up with a half hour of new shit and then have a half hour of my leftover solid shit. And I can mix and match them. You know, here's a couple of new ones. Here's the one that works. Here's another one that works if I need that. And then blah, 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 blah. And that's how I kind of use it to build up the new hour. And that's, you know, just shit that I've just learned throughout the years.
But and then I guess it's just because you've been doing it so long, it's just, it's what you do. So I mean, because I'm just sitting there trying to think, you know, I could be a funny guy in a room, but I ain't no stand-up. I ain't even close to being a stand-up. Never would claim to be. So when you're just sitting down, like, what's your process? Just like, hey, this would be funny. And then you take it to the level that you do. I mean,
I just write the word down.
Yeah?
I just write a word down. But you guys do the same thing. I remember seeing people saying, like, you know, Ric Flair, right? They go, hey, you know, did you have, like, writers and, you know, for your rants and blah, blah. He goes, writers? He goes, I came up with half that shit in the car ride over from the airport. And, or sometimes I'll be hanging with my wife. My wife always gives me shit because I don't take Uber.
Yeah.
It's just some fucking guy.
I get a cab.
Yeah, I get a cab.
Yeah.
I don't like the Uber drivers, like they, especially out here. They're in show business, half of them. They got a script. They know who the hell you are, and then they know where you live.
Yeah.
I don't like that. I like the cab driver.
Yeah.
Hello, my friend, blah, blah, blah. And then it's over. It's fucking over. So I went on this riff about it, about how, you know, it was basically like fucking hitchhiking. And then I did this whole serial killer, like, testimonial thing about, you know, how much he loves his job and everything. And she was dying laughing. And I was just like, all right, I'm going to do that. Now, that bit, you know, where it's at right now, would never be worthy. I wouldn't even do that on, like, a late-night show. Maybe it's like a late-night bit. But it's nowhere near where it's at right now would ever be put into a stand-up special. Even, I don't care how hard it kills. It's right. Just like, it's fucking Uber. It's like, to me, that's like, there's certain subjects that are just like, it's like, you know, remember that Chex Mix party mix? That's what it is. It's like that level. It's not like fucking Johnny Walker Blue up on the top shelf. It's just bullshit you're putting in your mouth. Now, those things, but what those are great about those things is they get you saying something new, which gets your mind in a new place, which could lead to something new. Like that bit could then elevate up to something that then, you know, you can take the most basic bit and you, depending on what you do with it, you can turn it into something worthy of being on a special. Whether it gets there or not, we'll see. We'll see what happens when I go up just riffing, messing around.
I read that you still like to travel.
I love it.
God damn it. Well, it's because you're still doing it, I think. Or maybe just because you love to travel. Because, man,
I like, once I get there, I hate going to LAX.
Oh, yeah.
That's why I never get mad at when babies cry on the planes. Because when babies cry on planes, it makes me laugh because I always think, like, that's exactly what I'm thinking right now. Like, if it was socially acceptable for me to break down and just start sobbing, I would. Because I feel exactly how that baby feels right now. I don't want to do this.
Right.
I want to go home.
When I was on the road, I always call it those 15 years, give or take, a zombie years. I mean, like, you're a human being.
Oh, yeah.
But you're just going, man. And you're doing the things in life. You're coherent and you're making decisions. But you're in go mode. That's just what you do. When I got out of the business, it took me 3 years to get out of that and turn back into a civilian. So, like, now when I travel, it's a real pain in the ass because I don't want to go nowhere. I'm a homebody now. I put up my time on the road, and I'm in a different mode. So I'll go somewhere to do work. I just don't like to travel or go to different spots. I ain't never been to Hawaii out of all the places I've been to. My wife, she's been 6 times. She wants me to go to Hawaii. I don't want to go to fucking Hawaii.
Go to Hawaii.
Yeah.
Do it.
You're telling me to go to Hawaii. I'm
going to
fly my helicopter over there. Okay. Here's the thing. Airplane. Check it out. If you're sitting there, you're riding in first class. And some dude walks by, or a chick, and they got on a shitload of cologne or perfume, and it just fucking punches you right in the goddamn mouth. The shit like that irritates the fuck out of me. Or it's the dipshit who doesn't have any
class.
Awareness. What?
You spent 15 years to get working your way up to the front of the plane. That's my thing now, is I blow most of my money on travel, like the traveling aspect of it. Like, I sat in the back of those motherfuckers for fucking almost 20 years. And I'm like that guy who went to jail for the last time. I'm like, I ain't going back.
Yeah.
I fucking sat there. You know what the worst was? Those DC-9s where you got the window seat and the fucking engine is right there.
Yeah.
You know, they had a malfunction one time and something flew out of the engine and just like took somebody's head off, went right into the fuselage.
I remember that.
Yeah. So like there's that. Or you get the seat next to the bathroom. Or I sat next to somebody one time who was so fucking fat. They were next to me and in front of me at the same time, dude. Like, I remember he was trying to make himself smaller by crossing his arms, which just, what are these muscles called on the side of your back?
Your lats.
His lats fanned out like a fucking dragon's wings. And it was like literally like in front of me. And what killed me was he was dating this chick who was so fucking petite. And she took the window. He took the middle seat. It's just because he wanted her to see shit.
Yeah.
It's like, will you fucking put the fat fuck over there and stick her in the middle?
Sit by him. Yeah.
Dude, her feet almost didn't touch the floor. She was so petite. And I'm just sitting there next to the guy. And I was in the last row. Seat didn't recline. All of that shit. And I just, at this point, like, I don't care if I'm flying to San Francisco. I'm just like, put me in the front of the fucking plane. But Bill, you're going to spend more on the ticket than you're going to make at the gig. I don't give a shit. I don't care.
The thing about it is, man, I'm very frugal with my money. But when you work with Vince, I flew, you know, coach my whole fucking life. Then finally turned into a top guy in New York. So then, dude, when you turn into Stone Cold or the
right.
Rock or Taker, whoever, Hulk, Flair,
You're front.
Once you get first class, you're first class for life. And so when we used to fly on our own dime back to Texas, I'd go cattle car or whatever, trying to save a buck. But, you know, back, you know, when you finally, because I paid, I'm going back to what you're saying, I paid my dues. And you were sitting, one of my biggest pet peeves is not only the cologne or the perfume. It's, I always tell people, just whatever you're spraying on, just a cunt hair less. Just one little fucking puff and just and put it away. Or the bag slapping in the head when you're going
down.
No,
my thing is the person's foot coming between the seats. Mine like you ought to be able to take a pen and just stab them right in the arch. Like,
or if you're sitting there and the person behind you uses the back of your seat to pull themselves up instead of using their fucking armrest, use that. Or here's one big one. I'm okay with chicks wearing sandals, but if it's a dude wearing sandals and I can see his feet,
I'm not cool with that.
I don't want to see a guy's feet.
I got
feet.
One. There was a guy in the seat right in front of me. He was like one of these guys. He was a big guy. And you know those people where they start to sit down using their muscles and halfway down it just becomes a free fall? They let themselves go. And this guy goes to sit down and just wham! And dude, the whole seat just came back into my knees. I was just like, dude, what the fuck? And I remember, you know, ever since, you know, post 9/11, like you reacting to a chair hitting your knees, all of a sudden you're a threat. Like, sir, what's the matter? Why are you being hostile? It's like, is that fat fuck? Just, you know, and then, you know, the F word starts coming out.
You're the bad guy.
Yeah, then I become the bad guy.
He's irate. There's something wrong with him. Sir, he's agitated.
Are you going to be okay to fly today? Like, that type of shit. I'm just like.
Yeah, I'm going to be fine. Shut the fucking door.
No, you know what I did? It was when I went to get up to get the guy back, I used the back of his chair, and I did it really quickly so his head would be off, and I let go, and it whacked him in the back of his head. But still, that's at least cushion for your head. I still got it the worst.
But see, here's another thing that gets me. When you're sitting there and there's someone in front of you, where they just, similar to what you just said, but they hit the button and they just automatically recline as fast as they can and as far back as they can. It's like when I'm sitting in front of somebody, I know I bought the same space. I know I've got that real estate to work with, but because I'm a good motherfucker and I've had all those things jammed to my knees, I'll only come back so far. Because
it's called being considerate.
It's etiquette. It's considerate.
Empathy. Yeah. People don't have it.
No, nobody gives a shit.
They don't.
Trying to not infringe on their space.
No, you know what's also in the back of the fucking plane, which I couldn't stand? It's like they scientifically designed every possible way that you were going to sit to try and get comfortable to make sure there was some piece of hard fucking plastic. They even measured, I swear to God, the distance between your armrests and the side of the plane if you have a window seat. Like, oh, I'm just going to lean my head here. You know, against this, maybe I can do this. And it's just far enough to make the other side of your neck start to fucking hurt. So you start balling up your hooded sweatshirt. It's just, it's the fucking worst. And I don't care how much money it costs me. I'm not going back. I'm not going back. I can't do it.
No, you can't go
back. I spent 20 years in the back of thousands of fucking planes. I'm just not doing it.
I've been there. Hey, man, is there anything else you want to talk about?
I think we covered it.
We did. Thanks for coming over.
Dude, it was an absolute thrill to meet you, and I got to shake your hand and thank you. The amount of entertainment that you've given me and the laughs, you and all the guys that you work with, you guys are some of the most amazing. Patrice O'Neill, I wish he was still around. The way he held, he's the greatest comic that I ever saw. The level that he held you guys in, he was saying, Bill, these guys are some of the greatest actors on TV. And I was just, what are you talking about, man? And he literally goes, dude, they're like this big. They're connecting with somebody in the fucking upper deck all the way over there. Just like, you know, me and all my friends are such huge fans of you guys. So thank you for everything you've done, all the sacrifices to your body. All right, now I'm done.
All right, everybody, give me to go home. Q, so I'm going to wrap up his podcast and ride off into the sunset. But before I do, time for me to give you guys something to watch. I'm going to say, go check out season one of F is for Family, Bill Burr's comedy series on Netflix. As you heard him say, they got greenlit for a second season, but it won't be out until next year. So go get caught up on season one. F is for Family. Bill is also doing some stand-up dates there in the UK the first week of August. I know I got a lot of listeners over there in the UK, and I ain't kidding when I tell you, go see Bill Burr do stand-up. Dude is funny as fuck. All his dates are at BillBurr.com. All right, a couple more plugs here while we're doing plugs. You can find all my T-shirt designs over at BrokenSkullRanch.com. Broken Skull IPA from El Segundo Brewing Company at Whole Foods Total Wine here in California. You want it to ship to your door? Go to BrokenSkullRanch.com and find a link. Also, everybody got to have one.
the Steve Austin broken skull cold steel pocket knife, one of the baddest goddamn knives you can find. And you need one in your pocket, because it's dangerous out there. Hopefully you only use it to open your letters and your bills, your mail. But every now and then, man got to have a knife. Hey, everything Steve Austin you can find at BrokenSkullRanch.com. And I appreciate y'all supporting the sponsors of the Steve Austin Podcast, because they are the ones who let me do this for you free twice a week. So big ups to DDPYoga.com. Go to DDPYoga.com/Austin. Get 20% off anything you purchase for a limited time, including the new collector's edition of the Resurrection of Jake the Snake documentary. Big ups to True Car. And, of course, to Amazon, who have been supporting this podcast since day one. Just use my Amazon links whenever you're doing any online shopping, and Amazon will kick back a couple of bucks to the podcast. Won't cost you nothing extra. Ain't no hidden fees. Ain't no hidden charges. You can buy whatever you plan on buying to help out the podcast in the process. And you can find my Amazon links by going to podcast1.com. Click on the Killer Deals button in the top right corner of the page, and then hitting the Steve Austin Show button. I got Amazon links for Amazon USA, Amazon UK, and Amazon Canada. So once again, podcast1.com, click the Killer Deals button in the top right corner, then click on the Steve Austin Show. All my great sponsors there. All my Amazon links are there too, and Amazon will kick back a couple of bucks to the show every time you use one of those links. You ain't going to buy nothing special. Ain't no extra charges, hidden fees. Just buy whatever you're planning on buying, and Amazon will kick back a small percentage back to the show, help cover our production cost. Bookmark it so you can find it easier. Wasn't that some good bullshit? And hey, keep listening. The 60-second AP News headlines are coming up next. Until then, my name is Steve Austin. I'll be pushing a vacuum cleaner, a feather duster, or a shop vac for about the next 24 hours till I go back to California. And until then, I will catch your ass down the road.
Download new episodes of Steve Austin Unleashed every Thursday at podcast1.com. That's podcastone.com.